What were you doing before you got into acting?
Selling coffee.
No, really?
Yeah, in Yorkshire, where they only drink tea.
That's a lousy job, then.
Really? You can see I spent most of my time at the cinema.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
And that I obviously got you into wanting to act. How did you get into it?
Well, I had a girlfriend who went to an elocution teacher in Liverpool, which is where I'm from. And she went to this lady, Mrs. Harold Ackley, who was an 80-year-old silent movie star. So I went to see her, and she went, "You've got a lovely voice. I think you could do it."
Real?
So, that's how I kind of got involved. And then I was offered a job just by chance and took it in the theater. And that was the end of my coffee.
That was
no
more coffee, no more vinyl moves for him. And
Clockwork was the second movie, right? It was after If.
No, Clockwork was my fourth movie. I did Figures in a Landscape was the second movie I did. Joe Losey directed it with Robert Shaw. And then I did a little English movie called The Raging Moon, which was called Long Ago Tomorrow here. It's about a paraplegic and is a very nice movie. And then Clockwork.
Yeah.
With Stanley. And then I went on to do Oh Lucky Man, which is another great film. And, Lindsay Anderson again, who was my, if you like, mentor or whatever. Certainly a great teacher and a great man, a brilliant director, and one of the nicest people ever.
Did you feel that? You said that. I think in I watched the DVD and all the stuff for the 40th anniversary.
You did?
Oh yeah, it was great. Wow. The commentary was amazing. I never watched commentary.
No,
but it was. Didn't you say that you kind of felt that Oh Lucky Man got overshadowed a bit by Clockwork, and that kind of annoyed you a little bit?
Well, yes, because that was I wrote the initial treatment for Oh Lucky Man, which starts off about being about a guy who's a coffee salesman, surprise, surprise, and who goes on a journey, a rather naive journey through life, looking for success, which is basically what we all do, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah.
And we all want to be successful, but at what price? And the film is a parable, and it's a beautiful film. It's still very relevant. I love the film. I showed it to some Italian journalists about a year ago. We got a big screen, the 35mm print, and they came out of this thing. They went, "It's so subversive."
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Subversive.
It sort of is. In a way, it's very subversive because it shows every establishment figure to be corrupt and basically evil.
Oh, so it's pretty accurate.
Well, here we go.
Yeah,
I mean, you said it, not me.
I have a Clockwork question that we debated at one point,
yes.
And I firmly believe this, and everybody told me I was wrong. When you go back to the writer's house, and when does he? I think he recognizes you the minute you come in because he knows you from the newspapers. He knows the guy in the paper is the one who killed. And they said, no, he doesn't recognize Alex until he's singing in the bathtub. I think he recognized you as soon as you came in. What is the proper answer for that?
You are wrong.
I am wrong?
Sorry to say.
And I can't argue because it's him.
The thing is, you are wrong and you are right. Because
damn it.
Because it's really up to every individual member of the audience. It doesn't really matter when if he does recognize him when I walk in, then why does he wait so long? So it doesn't really make any sense. But as soon as he recognizes him, because he...
Yeah, he
has
goes
this
a
reaction
little, goes
to
a little crazy.
Yeah. And then he comes down and when I'm eating and goes, "Food, all right."
What we have that?
Try the wine. Oh, very nice. Sir. Yes. Oh, lovely. What's that? Oh, center stuff. Oh, step. Yeah, lovely. 1967. Lovely.
And you said he said it felt like he was taking a dump. Patrick McGee, right? Is his name?
And he went, "What is Malcolm?" He's Irish, "What is with this Kubrick?" He goes, "Jesus, I mean, he's making me go so over the top. I feel like I'm chewing the scenery. I mean..."
Oh, shit, wow.
"This is the last shot. I feel like I'm taking a dump." And he's saying, "More, more. I mean, and there's no fucking Guinness on the set." He said, "Do you think you could do something about that?" I said, "I'll try." So I went to Stanley. I went, "Stanley, why don't you get the props to just get a couple of Guinnesses for Pat?" So he goes, "I don't want drinking on." I said, no, he's Irish.
That's not drinking.
That just lubricates. It's really to get him up for the... He goes, so they bought a case, which was like 24 small bottles. And Stanley, 3 days later, he calls me over and he goes, "Malcolm, that wasn't a very good suggestion." He goes, I went to check on the prop truck how many bottles are left. He goes, there isn't one. So he's drunk 24 bottles in 3 days. I went, and have you seen how great he's been?
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Scenes are fun. Did you notice while you were filming it, were you feeling the same thing? Like some scenes were maybe over the top or a little odd or something, and then seeing the final version, were you happy with what came out?
I never thought it was odd. No, because, you know, it is a stylized film. It's a stylized, you know, it's a bigger than life and out there. And, you know, it's a sort of, you know, I mean, everybody freaks about the violence and stuff, or they did 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's a comedy. I mean, I made a black comedy. You know, that's what I made. And when it came out, of course, everybody was so stunned with the look and everything else because, you know, it's the first time anyone had seen this look and the bowlers and the cod pieces and the whites and the eyelash and all that kind of stuff was sort of then. It was absolutely like it was from the moon or something. And then, you know, the Corova milk bar. The way it starts off, the first 20 minutes are amazing because it gives you no time to breathe. It's just wham, 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 and finishes with Singing in the Rain. You know? Oh. I know. Completely ruined that song for people.
No, it didn't. It made it good. That song sucked until you grabbed it.
Well, the truth is, you know, we didn't know what to do because in the so-called script, which was just a real skeleton to work from, you know, the boys come in, menace the guy, kick him down the stairs, and then throw bottles of booze through the windows. And he had all these, you know, sugar glass windows made. And I'm like, Stanley, that's sort of pathetic. Who cares? So, you know, we sat around for 5 days and didn't turn the camera in. Wow. I'd come to work and I'd see Harrod Truck there, Harrod, you know, from Harrod's, changing the furniture, the look. And he thought it was there somewhere. And in the end, he just walked past me and he goes, can you dance? And I by this time I'd kind of got my energy back and I was getting bored. So I went, can I dance? And I went straight into singing. I just improvised the whole thing of slapping her, whacking, boom, bouncing the ball. And he was like, get in the car, and drove back to his house, and he bought the rights to Singing in the Rain for 10 grand.
Wow.
Oh,
so cut a year later. A year. Then we had to go back, of course, and shoot the thing. And I'm going, what did I do there? Anybody write that down? You know, no, I had to do it all again. Anyway, a year later, I came out to Hollywood to meet people at the studio and all the rest of it. And so this minder said to me, you know, there's a big party in Beverly Hills. Would you want to come along? I think there's going to be a few movie stars there. And I went, yeah, my God, yeah, I'm from Liverpool. Of course I want to meet these movie stars, you know. And we go in there, and he goes, you won't believe it, Gene Kelly's here. I went, oh, my God, how great. And he had his back to me, and the minder guy just tapped him on the shoulder. He goes, Gene, I'd like you to meet Malcolm McDowell. He looked at me like I'd crawled out from a rock, and he just turned and walked away.
Holy shit.
And the guy goes, I do apologize. I said, don't apologize. I mean, of course he's upset. You know, I took his moment, not consciously, but there it was. You know, Hollywood gave us that as a moment of sheer joy and beauty. And, you know, to see him slapping the thing and singing in the rain, it's euphoria, isn't it? And that's how Alex felt when he was raping and beating.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you definitely did a better job with the song. The choreography in it, the brilliant, the slap, because you wrap tape around her head, you bite the tape, it's all timed so beautifully, and Dim trying to sing along, and he just can't do it. That's the
doobie-doo.
Ready for love.
Ready for love.
He just keeps saying that.
Yeah, that's right, ready for love.
Vidi well, little brother, Vidi well.
Yeah, and the Kubrick, you had a great relationship with him, and I was interested in the commentary when you said that you really never saw him again after the movie. Did he sever the relationship, or what happened at the end of the movie?
You know, I was a little naive thinking that, you know, that it would be the same sort of relationship and friendship that I had with Lindsay Anderson, who directed If and Oh Lucky Man. And so, you know, and I was a young actor, and I figured, I felt like I'd given him everything I had, you know, in the part.
and that we worked together for a year, and then suddenly silence. It's sort of weird. I couldn't really handle that. I just thought, I felt so used, I think. And I felt really angry and upset. And so, and then, you know, then he kind of had me sign a waiver of forgetting the billing, saying everybody's name was going to be at the back end of the movie, which was fine with me. And then I see the movie, and there's Kubrick this, Kubrick that, and Kubrick the other five times. It's like, he, you know, we don't count as actors. And, you know, he's not the kind of director that has really any idea about the performance. You know, you ask any actor that's worked with him, he just goes, show me. Which is why I love working with him, because it meant that you could literally come with anything. I used to joke with him saying, no wonder you love Peter Sellers. He could give you 40 different voices and characters, and you'd go with it, you know.
He was more about the look than he was the performance of the actors, leaving them to... Cause some
and
directors,
he wouldn't turn the camera unless there was magic there.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd wait. He'd wait. And but, you know, I never got the 100 takes and all that stuff. I mean, that was... down the line, I don't know why he suddenly went into...
He started
thought
doing that.
You know, if he could, you know, bore him to death and get it. With me, I mean, seriously, if we did 10 takes, it was unusual.
And you said you seemed to be in on the creative process a lot, too. Like you said, you would watch the dailies. You would talk over what you were going to do as opposed to him just going, do this. Because didn't you guys kind of did the movie from the book, didn't you?
Basically, I had the book with me all the time. He didn't. But I'd go, whoa, what are you doing? Well, that's not what it... He goes, oh, what does it say? And I'd read it out, and he'd go, oh, that's I like that. I like that. Okay. And sometimes he was right. Sometimes it wasn't in the book. The book really doesn't give you any hints as to really who this character of Alex is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of veneer. And the book is brilliant. You know, it's Burgess's masterpiece, but it's, you know, this great political sort of statement about the freedom of man to choose. You know, whether you want to be immoral or moral. I mean, that's basically what the film's about,
right?
You know, at the end of the day. And I think why it's lasted so well is that this political element is just as relevant today as it was then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything else we've caught up, you know. But don't forget, when it first came out, I mean, literally, I went to Third Avenue to Cinema One, and it was jammed. There were lines and the whole deal, and people were so excited, the new Kubrick movie, and they just sat there in stone silence. And I'm like, what's the matter with these Americans?
Wow.
Haven't they got a sense of humor? Don't
they get
it? Don't they get
this?
Jeez, I'm like, they hate it. They really hate this movie. Oh, my God, they hate it. Then one woman in the middle of it runs out into the lobby and throws up.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, my God, I'm really making people so happy. But the truth was, you know, I hadn't really seen it in England, and it was the same thing.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was the same thing. I mean, they laughed maybe a little more because they got the English humor a bit.
Right,
But it was, and I understand now, overwhelming in just...
How was it taken by the critics?
They didn't like it.
Like,
four nominations, right? Four Oscar nominations, but didn't
Ebert
win?
Didn't like it, I remember.
Huh?
Roger
really?
Ebert
Roger
gave
Ebert?
It two out of four.
Yeah.
What does he know?
Dope.
What an idiot.
But were they...
Sorry to say, but, you know, listen, you can... Unfortunately, the critics can always be found out years later.
That is
know.
True.
Right. Yeah, good
and
point.
And what film are we watching now? And what was the one that you said was so great?
Yeah.
And what was the Academy Award winners, by the way, that, of course, have never seen the light of day?
Mm-hmm.
Because this film... And not because of any brilliance on the part of Warner Brothers, although, you know, they have a great department for doing that, but you can't force a movie 40 years on the public. It just ain't going to wash.
Yeah.
And either they love it or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that this movie has stood the test of time, and it's just amazing. How many more versions can they bring out? You know,
yeah.
But they've got this 40th edition... Blu-ray, which is actually even better than it was when it first came out. I was amazed when I saw it.
And it has, just so you know what it has on it, because I've watched almost everything on it, it's got the film, it's got the Malcolm's commentary, and it also has an additional disc, which is about Kubrick as a director, and it's amazing who you guys got for that, because Malcolm talks in it, obviously, Cruise narrates it, he's in it, Nicholson never does interviews.
Right.
All these guys talking about Kubrick, Nicole Kidman, And it's got on the DVD, it's got this thing about Clockwork 40 years later, the making of Clockwork. Fuck it. If you're a Clockwork fanatic like I am, it's amazing what's on this.
Did you see Never Apologize? Did they send you that too?
No, I'm actually was just handed this. It's
That's great. I'm very proud of that because that, you know, I it came up because people didn't know who Lindsay Anderson was, and it really upset me. So, because he was a genius. This man was, I mean, just so incredible. As brilliant as Kubrick was in a completely different way. Kubrick was a great satirist, but Anderson was a great humanist, and he loved the human condition and founded, of course, the foibles in it, but and pointed them out. But his movies are extraordinary, and I was asked to go and introduce. they had some kind of retrospective at the Edinburgh Festival, and I was playing golf actually. And I said, "Well, I'll do better than that. I'll come and do a show about him." You know, thinking, "Oh, it's a year. I've got a year, but think about that." And never get there. And of course, 6 weeks before that, I'm like, "Oh my God!" I'm calling up everybody in England, having them send over, you know, diaries and the letters. And thank God, there's a great archive of his stuff at Stirling University, and I was able to get it. And this is about my relationship with him that led to Stanley Kubrick, and
because he gave you Clockwork without an audition, right? Wasn't it from If? I think he loved you at If and gave you the audition.
Yes,
from
he
that.
Did. And but it was Lindsay Anderson who told me how to play the part in Clockwork because I asked Stanley. He goes, "Hey, Malcolm, that's why I hired you. I'm not Rada." And I was like, "Ooh, okay." I went, "Has anybody got a call sheet?" I went, "Look at this, Stan, director S. Kubrick, how about some direction?" And he just laughed, you know, but that was the way. That was a great gift, actually. But I asked Lindsay if he'd read the script and if he had any notes for me. And this is before I started shooting. And so he said he read it and he called me around to his flat in London. As soon as I arrived, he goes, "Well, thank God I don't have to direct this." Now, my heart, I said, "Look, Lindsay, I know it's not your kind of material." He said, "All right, this is how you play it." He goes, "There's a shot in If when you open the gymnasium doors to be beaten by the prefects and you look at them and you smile." He goes, "That's how you play it." And I went, "Oh, my God, he is so right." What a brilliant piece of direction. Wow. That's how I played it.
It was almost scarier that way because you realize here's this smiling, charismatic, very aware guy who's a sociopath. It was like he knows what he's doing, and you still can't connect or get mercy from him. I thought that made it a much more scary character.
It did, and you know, you're right. And I think it was the French critics pointed this out to me. I'd not really thought about it, but I think it was the first time in cinema history that, you know, the portrayal of a psychopath who gets the sympathy of the audience without milking it. Because of who he is and that he loves life and Beethoven.
And I think one of my favorite
Ludwig van
lines.
Lovely, lovely Ludwig van.
Yeah.
Watching you get more obnoxious as the Ludovico treatment wears off was fucking great. And I didn't know that it was, you start to notice hilarious. When they start showing him fun little slides. And you improv that scene, which was fucking hilarious.
I did because, you know, we'd done too many takes. And I said, "Stanley, you know, can I just say what the first thing that..." He goes, "Try it." And so that's what
it's hilarious,
he's chosen.
Yeah.
And it is hilarious because it's so real. And the energy suddenly picks the film up and just takes you through to the end. And, you know, I improvised all the eating, you know, with the minister. And it's because, you know, that I was bored listening to it. Stanley was bored, and he didn't know how to wrap the film up. But, you know, the poor guy had the whole political speech that he had to. And so just out of boredom, I was... And Stanley, like, stuck his handkerchief in his mouth, and tears were rolling down his cheeks. He was laughing so
hard.
Oh,
that's
hard.
Awesome. It's such a memorable part of that movie.
Absolutely.
It's
I know.
Hysterical.
But the actor was so pissed.
Oh, really?
Oh!
The idiot that handed Kubrick the script back at the end?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking...
He went, Stanley comes up to me and he goes, "You will never believe what just happened." I went, "What? What is it?" He goes, "No. Anthony Sharp, he just gave me the script back. And I went, yeah? Well, he probably thinks somebody else won. He goes, I've never had an actor give me a script.
Oh,
they, I said, well, why not? He goes, well, they want them for souvenirs. I went, well, here, here's mine.
That was, when you were improvising, the question she was asking you, that woman, they were so ripe to be fucking had mean shit said to.
There's a guy coming through the window, right, a naked woman in bed, and he goes, no time for the old in-out, love, I've just come to read the meter.
You sold me a crummy watch, and I'd like my money back.
I'd like to take that watch and stick it up your ass!
Yeah, you laughing with the next break. Happy laugh. Yeah.
Very happy at that point,
it's just, isn't it brilliant, though? It's a brilliant way of showing that he's back to normal.
Slowly coming back.
Which is odd, because as the audience, you're like, oh, good, he's back.
Yeah!
You're like, wait a minute.
He's a serial killer.
Back to being a,
he's a psychopath.
Yeah, psychopathic,
and we're all
rapist
happy
murderer.
About it.
Yeah.
But that's the brilliance of Burgess, really. That's the brilliance of it. That the hero of the piece is this immoral guy.
Yeah, who you felt bad for when he was being broken like that.
The thing was to make him brutal at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's brutal. And when he's, you know, beating that tramp and, you know, and he's the big fight with Billy Boy and in the cat people hitting him with the dildo. I mean, that's a brilliant.
Yeah.
That's pure Kubrick, by the way.
Oh,
Oh, I mean, I went, you got to be kidding. This is what I'm going to kill her with?
By the way, Billy Boy and the guy is about to rape that girl. She probably had the greatest set of tits I've ever seen in a film.
Oh, fuck,
girl that Billy Boy and them were dragging through was fantastic.
I make absolutely no comment on that.
But you're right.
Oh, but the girl that comes out... Where, you know, when I'm to and she's in the spotlight and she comes out and I go up to touch the old titties and you know, she was a very beautiful girl. So I heard that she had an antique shop in London, and I went into the antique shop, and it was like, it was so weird because, you know, of course we've all aged somewhat, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, this was a little middle-aged lady with a little handbag, you know, and they're missing. I'm going, you were the tits, right? Malcolm, that's right. Because I taught her how to do the bow at the end. I went, no, no, you got to really relish it, you know, and that was great.
And the guy really hurt you when he stepped on your... You say that shoe? The guy who made you lick his shoe, he actually hurt your lung when he fucking jabbed his heel into your
right
chest.
Through my ribs. I was stupid. I should have put a pad.
Wow. But
yeah, and it went through my ribs, and Stanley was like, well, you can't be that sick. I went, I don't know, Stanley, I can barely breathe.
Holy shit.
And so I went and had an x-ray. It didn't show up, but there was a blood clot under my rib.
Wow.
I know. I was very lucky that they caught it, and they stuck a big needle between my ribs and dispersed it. Yeah, the clock working. The guys working on the electricians, we'd say, you know, Mount, he's trying to kill you.
Are they telling us we have to wrap?
Yeah.
Nolan is panicking at the door.
What? Okay, we have to wrap with the great Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, man.
I have something I'm going to ask Malcolm to sign. Normally I would never. I'm so happy you're
here. Please say no.
40th anniversary of Clockwork Orange. It honestly is amazing, the Blu-ray. It's all this great stuff on it. Malcolm's commentary is amazing. This Kubrick Essential Collection is out, and something I really want to see is Never Apologize. And it's Malcolm McDowell kind of, you're doing a one-man...
Reminiscing. And reading some of his diaries and letters, which are amazing. I mean, Anderson is a major, major director, especially in Britain, where was one of the great theater directors, and of course did If, Oh Lucky Man, and Britannia Hospital.
Well, thank you. We love you.
Absolutely,
thank you so much.
And thanks, because I got to see my old mate, Brian.
Yes. I had a feeling you guys knew each other, I just want credit for having said that before. Nobody gives a shit. I said
that
it.
That was
so
great.
I took a guess, and I was right. Who cares?
No, it's so cool to just see two icons as just pals bullshit
just chilling
like
out.
That.
Yes.
It's very cool.
I love that guy. He's
apparently
a really
fabulous
guy.
That's well, very cool.
Let's get him out of here. This was
and he got to sing. It's good to be gone.
I know. And we got to listen.
Yeah, that's fabulous. fabulous.
This was a thrill for us, Malcolm. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Hey, a great pleasure. Thanks, guys.
I think we're done for the day, too, huh? All right, we're getting out of here. Thanks, guys. See you tomorrow.